not have power on yet. Anybody? Okay, if you don't have your power on yet, then see me or one of the other elders before you leave this morning so we can do what we need to do to get you taken care of. Okay? Now, another note on these kinds of tragedies, all right? We had a really difficult time trying to get hold of a lot of folks because phone lines were out, cell towers were out, all of those kinds of things. Here's something I want to ask you to do, okay? The next time we have something like this that happens, and by the way, we got another storm called Katia that's kind of steering the way, and we may this coming weekend be, you know, there all over again. We'll have to wait and see. But the next time we have something like this, a widespread thing like this, I'm going to ask everyone if you would please call one of the elders and let us know that you are okay or that you need this or that or what have you as soon as you can get hold of a phone that works or what have you, if you would give one of us a call. Because otherwise we don't have any way to get in touch with you and your phone may be out the whole week or what have you, and we're still trying to get in touch with you. So that would make it a lot easier, especially if you need something and we can't get hold of you. Just call one of us and let us know, and please, just so that we know everybody's okay, just give us a call and say, hey, we're doing fine, our power's out, but we got it all taken care of, or hey, you know, we need this or we need that or whatever it is. That way we can look after one another a little bit better, okay? We keep in touch with each other that way. I see that Sister Ada Cox is back. We got this postcard from her. The writing on the back, I can't read it very well, Sister Ada. I think it says, Russ, I've just moved and this is a picture of my new house. I know you can't see it way back there, but this is a glass palace. Is that what it says, Sister Ada? She had a vacation with her daughters and went up and stayed in the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center up there near D.C. But we are glad to have you back with us and back safely with us. We are talking about and have been talking about overcoming strongholds. That is, those things that Satan uses to hold us in bondage to him. And we've been on a study for the last several months looking at, in our study on prayer, looking at various strongholds. Well, this morning we're going to finish this series of lessons on overcoming strongholds. And we're going to do that by talking about overcoming the enemy. And all of these strongholds that we've been talking about, the one common denominator that we have to keep in mind is that we have an enemy, and that enemy is Satan. Some of you didn't sound like you were too sure about that. Okay? All right? So what I want to do this morning is I want us to focus for a few minutes on, okay, we recognize we have these strongholds, and as we've talked about throughout this study, we don't all struggle with the same strongholds. Satan knows where our weaknesses are, and for some, he may give this stronghold, and for others, this stronghold, or these strongholds. But nevertheless, we need to understand that Satan is our enemy, and he is always attacking us. So the question is we've looked at and talked about these different strongholds. We've talked about praying the promises of God, and we looked at each of these different things. And what are the things that God tells us in His Word, the promises that He makes to strengthen us and help us to deal with those things? Well, this morning let's focus on just the general topic of, all right, Satan is our enemy. What can we do and what do we need to do so that we can really overcome him in our daily fights? The first thing that we have to learn and realize is, and I want to refer you to the text that was read for us as we began. In your notes, you notice that the topic of point number A there is sifted like wheat. Okay? Jesus says to Peter, and this is just before Jesus is arrested and crucified, Jesus says to Peter, one of his closest friends of all of his disciples, okay, he says to Peter, makes that statement, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. Now, I want you to stop and think about for a moment, what does it mean to be sifted? Okay? Some of you ladies that have been baking and everything, you know what it means to sift flour or what have you, and you're trying to get out any impurities out of there and all that. Well, you see, the sifting process is a, if you were a piece of wheat or a grain of wheat, it would hurt, okay? All right? It's intended to be a rough process so that you get out whatever's there. And so this idea of Jesus is saying to Peter, look, Satan is getting ready to work you over. He has asked to have you so that he can work you over, to test your faith. And one of the things that we have to understand if we want to be able to overcome the enemy is that sometimes God is going to allow Satan to sift us. Go and consider the story of Job. You see, God allowed Satan to sift Job, and in this situation, Jesus is telling Peter, Simon, Peter, that Satan has asked for him so that he could sift him as one would sift wheat, you say. But Jesus goes on to say, and this ought to give us an awful lot of hope, he says, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. In 1 John chapter 2, John there tells us that Jesus is our defense attorney. He says he speaks to the Father in our defense. That ought to give us a tremendous amount of hope. That just like Jesus said he was praying for Peter while this sifting was going on, that we should realize and remember that we have Jesus who is speaking to the Father on our behalf. See? We need to understand and realize that we are going to be sifted. Satan is going to do everything he possibly can to get us to fail in our relationship with God. And that's what we've been studying for the last, 30 Sundays in the Bible study classes, the Screwtape Letters, and looking at how, what are some of the things and the ways that Satan uses to try to trip us up and to trap us and to hold us in bondage to him. Peter wrote in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, be careful or be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. We need to realize in spiritual warfare how important it is and how serious we're involved in this. Okay, Beth Moore, in her book on prayer that we've kind of been looking at throughout all of this, I really like the way she talks about this. She explains here that really Satan looks at us in a sense of having three different stages of attention that he pays to us. Okay? The first stage, she says, is being of interest to him, that is to Satan. Okay? That someone is of interest to Satan, I believe is a point, or at least it can be a point where someone becomes a Christian. You see, before that, so you're not of interest to Satan. He's already got you, so why should he be bothered with you? But at the point one person gives their life to Christ, all of a sudden Satan sits up and he takes notice. And that person then becomes of interest to Satan. And then there is the stage called being of concern to him. Okay? And that's where a person is being an active Christian. Now, I want you to notice something here in the difference between those. I'm convinced of this. Satan really doesn't care whether people become Christians or not, as long as they don't practice their faith. You see? And as long as people will say, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus, and they get baptized and it doesn't really affect their life any, he doesn't really care. You'll just stay of interest to him. But when you start becoming active as a Christian, you start living your faith, then he starts getting concerned. And then the third stage is being a threat to him. And that's where a person has a passion for Christ in their lives. A passion where they live their life every day intently on being more like Christ. Satan is threatened by that. Now, here's the thing that you have to understand and keep in mind about that. The more the threat, you see, the harder that Satan is going to work on. And I think that's one reason why a lot of people are content to just believe in God, you see, and to just be of interest to Satan, because if I'm just an interest to Satan, then maybe he's just not going to bother me a whole lot. Because I promise you, the more of a threat you become to Satan, then the harder he is going to work, and the more difficult the trials and the tribulations are going to be. Folks, this is where spiritual warfare is at its deepest and its darkest. Because Satan sees Christians who are passionate for Christ, he sees them as a threat, because what that means is that they're going to be doing everything they can to share their faith with others and to help others to overcome the struggles that they face and so forth. And Satan doesn't like that. We oftentimes look at those who are leaders within churches and we see them fall and stumble in sin and we go, well, how could that happen? They know better than that. Well, the reason it happens is because Satan was able to get into that person, and because they were a threat to him, he worked on them extra hard and he overcame. When someone becomes a threat to Satan, that puts them right in his crosshairs. See? That's not when Satan is going to leave him alone. Instead, that's when he's going to go after you even more. The stronger the relationship with God, the more intense the spiritual warfare, the more intense the battles. Satan is not that concerned about those who are just merely Christians by name. He's concerned about those who are passionate about their relationship with God. In that deepest, darkest type of spiritual warfare, where Satan uses lies, where he uses isolation, where he uses blindness to the truth, all of those kinds of things to pull people away from God. My daughter Katie is in the deepest, darkest point of spiritual warfare right now. That's where she's at. This is not your typical everyday battle, and you've heard me be talking about this over and over again, that we have to realize that every single day that we go out, we are entering into spiritual warfare. And there are some days that are more intense than others. But brethren, what I'm telling you is that this kind of spiritual warfare is the deepest and darkest kind of battle you can be in. Because Satan is not going to give up. What do we do about that? How do we overcome the enemy? You see? We need to understand, first of all, the nature of the warfare that we're in. The fact that we are in spiritual warfare. We've got to understand that. Because if we don't, then we've lost the battle already. See? Once we understand that and realize that that's what we're dealing with every single day, then what we've got to do is prepare ourselves for battle. Ephesians chapter 6, a text that we've talked about many, many times, and you've probably, you know, in your lifetime heard, you know, an oodle and oodles of sermons on the armor of God. But it's there for a reason. You see, it's there to prepare us for the spiritual warfare that we are in every day of our lives. And that's why Paul, in verse 10, starts out this passage here in saying to be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power and to put on the full armor of God. Why do we need to do that? Well, he answers that question. How do we prepare ourselves for battle against Satan? We put on the full armor of God so that we can take your stand against the devil's schemes. You see, God wants us to be prepared. And so He has given us the equipment, if you will, the armor, the tools, the weapons that we need to be victorious in our spiritual warfare. The problem is that I think that there are too many of us that are going into battle every day totally and completely unprepared. Some of you are not putting on the armor. Some of you, I'm afraid, don't even realize or acknowledge the fact that you're in battle. It's almost like, you know, the war against terrorism that we are involved in. Y'all remember that, right? That we are at war? Do y'all remember that? You know, the reason that we don't think about it very much is because it's going on over there. And we've got soldiers over there fighting that war, right? Brethren, we need to remember and understand it's not over there somewhere. Spiritual warfare is right here, right now, in every single one of our lives. It's not on a foreign battlefield somewhere. It's within our hearts and our minds. And if you don't realize that, and you don't accept that, and you don't prepare yourself, then you've lost the war already. And there are some who've already been taken prisoner and don't even realize it. We've got to be aware. We've got to keep in mind how important it is for us to be prepared, for us to wear the armor and to use the armor that God has given us, because whether we accept the fact or not, we are in the midst of warfare. And the warfare is not going to just go away by us going, I'm just not going to worry about that. That's exactly what Satan wants us to do. And when we take that approach, then we have been taken prisoner at the very least. See? The other thing that we have got to do, parents, listen to me, please. Parents, listen to me, please. We have got to prepare our children for spiritual warfare. History tells us that the Spartans were a very warlike people. They understood the meaning and the nature of warfare. And out of necessity for their own survival, they became a people who trained and who knew well how to defend themselves and to protect themselves and how to fight and win wars. At the age of 7 years old, Spartan boys were taken from their homes, and they began a training that would last the rest of their lives to train them to become warriors so that they would be able to help to defend their country. At 7 years old, the girls were taught similar kinds of things, athletics and other things that would make them useful to the country in defending itself against any aggressors. History is full of stories of the might and the power of a Spartan army. The reason that I'm telling you that is because we, in the midst of spiritual warfare, have got to take the same attitude and approach when it comes to our children. To train them, to prepare them, so that they can adequately defend themselves. Lest we lose our children. Parents, that means you've got to get them to Bible classes on time. Make yourselves get them here. Bring them here so that they can learn. We can help you. You need to be teaching them at home. We can't adequately teach your children all they need to know in an hour and a half or 2 hours of Bible study a week. They watch three times that much of information on television every day. It's up to you to teach them. And it's up to us as a church to help you to do that. But we can't help you if you don't bring them here, you don't avail them to the things that are available. You see, I think that so often what happens with our children is that we are convincing them, perhaps not intentionally, but we're convincing them that their secular school is more important than Bible classes, for instance. Because we place an awful lot of emphasis on them doing their school homework and their work, their school. And even if there's, you know, schoolwork they got to do, they can't be here on Wednesday night because they got homework or what have you. And what's the message that we're telling them? Your secular life is more important than your spiritual life. Now, you know, I know that, you know, probably, most likely, I've stepped on some toes this morning with that. And that's intentional. If your toes are out there in the wrong place, then they needed to be stepped on to get your attention so that you would see the importance. Folks, this is real. I can't tell you how hard my wife and I worked, how we invested our lives in our children to raise them in the Lord. And I have no doubt in my mind that my daughter knows better than what she's doing. We taught her. We brought her. They came to church every time the doors were open. And she's still fell as a prisoner to Satan. What happens to those kids that we don't bother to teach them? They don't stand a chance. They don't stand a chance. So I'm urging you, parents, help to prepare your children for battle because they are going to face it. Well, we're in the midst of this battle. As I've said over and over again, we're in it every single day. And sometimes the battles are more fierce than others. So what do we do in the midst of these battles? How do we come out of these things victorious? Well, there's one important key to that. And we find that over in Hebrews chapter 12. You know, in battles, again, historians, you know, paint a picture for us. In the battles of the Middle Ages and so forth, you'd have these armies that would meet out in the middle of a battlefield, you know, waving swords and flashing them back and forth and spears and whatever. And there is always one person, see, who is the rallier. And that's usually whoever the leader is, you see. And the reason that that's so important is that that leader of the army, whether it be the king or some other person, the rest of the troops in that army are watching that leader on the battlefield. And that person is able to rally his troops. Victory. They look for direction from the leader on the battlefield. You see. And they look for encouragement. And we have the same thing. The writer of Hebrews in chapter 12, verses 1 through 4 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses," he's talking about all of those people of great faith that we read about in chapter 11, okay? And he calls them his great cloud of witnesses. And he says, "Since we're surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." Look at verse 2. "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter," or some of your translations say finisher, "of our faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. What is He telling us to do? Keep your eyes on the King. In the midst of the battle, keep your eyes on the King, so that you can have encouragement, so that you can get direction, you see, so that you can find a rallier, one that will say, "Come on, keep going, don't give up." Keep your eyes on the King. You see, in doing all of that, in first of all, understanding that we are at war, and secondly, being prepared for battle, and then finally keeping our eyes on the King, it allows us to do, I think, one of the most important things that we can do, and that is to live victoriously. And that's what we want to do. You see, there's a difference between living successfully and living victoriously. Anybody can live successfully. Even those who are outside of the Lord, they can live successfully. But only those in the Lord can live victoriously. See? I don't want to just be successful in my daily battles against Satan. I want to be victorious. You see. I want to overcome. I want to live victoriously as one who overcomes the Goliaths that I face in my life. And I want to be victorious as one who crosses my Red Seas on dry ground. Not sloshing through the mud to hopefully get to the other side, but victoriously to cross on dry ground. See, there's a reason why that one word is in that text, isn't it? It makes all the difference in the world whether you cross over sloshing through the mud or whether you cross over on dry ground. I I want to be victorious and I want you to be victorious in your daily struggles, in your daily fights against Satan. You can overcome him, not just survive the battle. I don't want to just survive. I want to win victory. How about you? Satan certainly has a lot of tools at his disposal. As we've been doing this study, looking at all of these strongholds that he uses against us, all in an attempt to pull us away from God so that he can win us away from God for himself. That's what his plan is all about. He wants to hurt God, and the only way he knows he can do that is by taking God's creation away from him. The only way we can be victorious is by fighting against him, using the weapons that God has provided for us, the armor that he's provided, and keeping our eyes on the King as we go into battle every single day. Some of you that are here this morning, as I mentioned earlier, are already taken captive by Satan. Some of you aren't even of interest to Satan because you're not even a Christian yet. And until you become a Christian, he really doesn't care. If that's where you are right now, then I want to encourage you and urge you. If you're ready to make a commitment to give your life to Christ, become of interest to Satan by giving your life to Christ. Confess him as Lord. Repent of your sins that are separating you from God and have those sins washed away in the waters of baptism. You can do that right now. But you need to understand, until you do, you will be captive to him. Some of you may be in that category of that you're just of interest to him, that you became a Christian, but that's about all there is. If that's where you are in your life right now, I want to urge you to realize what's going on and to realize that Satan is perfectly happy in keeping you right where you are. He does not want you to become active in your faith and certainly does not want you to become passionate in your relationship with Christ. If you need some encouragement or guidance or help, teaching, whatever it takes to help you to be victorious in your struggles against Satan, let us know. That's what we're here for. Okay? That's what it's all about. We've got a song that we're going to sing in just a moment, Steve, if you'll come up, and we're going to use this as an invitation song. It's an opportunity for anyone to come and to say, hey, this is what's going on with me. This is a battle that I'm fighting. I need help. This is a struggle that I have. I want to become a Christian. Whatever it is that we can do for you, this is a time for you to come and say, let us know.